The first medical marijuana dispensary opens today in Jacksonville. Good morning. And live from Studio 5, this is First Coast Connect on 89.9. Thanks for listening. I'm Melissa Ross, and we are always live at 9. Also, never miss a show. Download the WJCT app. Listen to us there anytime or on iTunes. We're streaming live on Facebook right now, too. Just ahead, the cannabis company Trulieve opens its first local dispensary today. Medical marijuana now available for purchase here in Duval. What do you think about that? Give us a call, 549-2937. Then later, July marks Medical Malpractice Month, why medical errors continue to be a leading cause of death. Plus, we'll tell you why the new IKEA store in Jacksonville may be painted blue on the outside, but it's really a very green facility that's in our Going Green. All of that and more ahead. But first, this hour, after Florida voters overwhelmingly approved legalizing medical marijuana in the state last year, that product, THC, or cannabis, is now available for purchase here in Jacksonville. A firm called Trulieve is opening a medical cannabis dispensary today. It will be located at 6259 Beach Boulevard. Now, Trulieve currently delivers its product statewide, and it has seven other dispensaries located all around Florida. Patients seeking cannabis for an array of medical problems will find an assortment of low THC and high THC products with various delivery methods like capsules, vaporizers, and tinctures, but not smoking the drug. Victoria Walker is the community relations spokesperson for Trulieve, and she's on the line with more. Victoria, good morning.
Good morning.
Thanks for being with us. And here's our question to callers. What are your thoughts and comments about the medical marijuana dispensary Trulieve opening up on Beach Boulevard in Jacksonville today? Give us a call at 549-2937. That's 549-2937. Or send your emails to firstcoastconnect@wjct.org, tweets to @MelissaInJax, or weigh in on our Facebook page. So Trulieve is holding a press conference, Victoria, in just about an hour with tours of its dispensary. What can people expect when you open your doors?
Yeah, what you can expect is to see a really comfortable dispensary. Now, you have to be a patient to go back into the dispensing part of the store, but we have a lot of information set up in our lobby if you want to learn more about our product or how to find a doctor here in Jacksonville.
Okay. You're selling cannabis, low THC and high THC products. Tell me a little bit about the product line.
Sure. So in Florida, our product line is ranges from capsules, which is an oral delivery method, oils, which can be used sublingually under the tongue. We also have a full line of vaporizing products, different types of vaporizing pens, as well as cartridges for those pens.
Okay. And this product, of course, voters approved legal cannabis in Florida to treat a variety of medical conditions. Based on the type of business and traffic you're seeing in your other dispensaries around Florida, what's your customer base like? What type of person is most commonly seeking out this product to treat their ailments?
It's really all over the board. From, you know, very severe PTSD, we see a lot of cancer patients, a lot of epilepsy, muscle spasms. It's a whole range of conditions. And the exciting thing is we continue to see new patients every single day.
So you're seeing a lot of demand then?
Absolutely.
Okay. And if you're just tuning in, medical marijuana comes to Jacksonville today as the firm Trulieve opens up a dispensary on Beach Boulevard in 1 hour, actually less than an hour. We'll go to your calls in a moment. What are your thoughts about legal medical marijuana for sale in the area? It's 549-2937. Now, let me ask you, Victoria, you mentioned that THC can be bought now over the counter in Jacksonville in the form of capsules, oils, vaporizers, and such, not smokable. What about this lawsuit that was filed the other day by John Morgan? He's the Orlando trial lawyer who financed this successful campaign to legalize medical marijuana in the state. He's arguing that Florida legislatures violated the voters' intent when they approved that amendment because, as of right now, smoking medical marijuana is still prohibited in the Sunshine State. This product, THC, will not be available in smokable form at your dispensary. What about this lawsuit, and what about the issues that are raised there?
Yeah, so we have to and will always operate within the law the way that it's written. We believe in whole flower and the benefits of that entourage effect, and it's our goal to be able to create products, because flower is not illegal, but smoking it is. So we're working with the Department of Health to come out with solutions, but you know, we're going to operate the way we have to within the law right now.
And, you know, the argument against medical marijuana, of course, was that it would be a slippery slope. It would open the door to recreational marijuana in the state. Does Trulieve take a position on that? Where's your company with that? And what would you say to those who are concerned that people will seek THC at your dispensary for purposes other than, you know, treating a medical condition?
Sure. So in order for any patient to purchase THC or CBD in Florida, they have to see a registered qualified physician. So it's not an easy process to just walk in and buy it over the counter like you would at a pharmacy or a CVS. So they have to see a physician. The physician has to verify that they have a qualifying condition and feel comfortable putting an order in for a THC product for that patient. And then they have to apply for an ID card through the state. So that process is a few weeks long also. So it really is, what we see are patients who truly need this as medicine. That's who is going after these products. That's who is seeing their physician. That's who's coming to our doors. And they are very sick. So we're here producing high-quality medicine. And, you know, it's the process is definitely regulated to prevent misuse.
Sure. And talk a little bit more about the regulation in the state, how your firm Trulieve operates. You have dispensaries in Clearwater, Edgewater, Miami, Pensacola, Tallahassee, Tampa, The Villages, and now Jacksonville. This is, by all accounts, a heavily regulated product. How does that affect your business?
Well, it definitely makes the process of patient access more, because it's regulated. We do, just in creating the products alone, takes many, many months. We do three types of lab testing, two internal, one external. All of our lab reports are on our website, so patients know exactly what's in their specific products. We have to get our products approved by the Department of Health. The Department of Health inspects our stores, and everything has to operate the way that we wrote it into our license. So our license application was 2,000 pages. So we take it very seriously. We have a lot of processes in our stores to make sure that everything we're doing follows the law as it was prior to the new amendment, and then how it is now signed into law. We've made a lot of adjustments to make sure that we're operating within that framework.
Okay. And if you're just tuning in, the cannabis company Trulieve is opening a dispensary on Beach Boulevard this morning for the sale of THC, cannabis, medical marijuana. What are your questions and comments? It's 549-2937 as we talk about medical marijuana in the state, now available for patients. Cassie in Jacksonville Beach. Hey, Cassie, good morning. You're on the air.
Hi, good morning. I would like to know, as far as what we were just discussing about the regulation, if you come in and pay cash versus credit card, what is the difference in that, and how is that money regulated? Am I taxed more?
Oh, yeah, the taxing of this product. Yeah, thanks, Cassie.
That's a great question. So because it's a medical product, there is no tax payable on this product. As soon as that bill was signed by Governor Scott, the tax went away. So this is a non-taxable product. No tax will be charged. And we don't accept credit cards because it's not approved federally. So it is cash, or there is an app called CanPay, which accepts, similar to a Venmo. You're able to make purchases with your phone and an app set up directly to your checking account.
Now, as you point out, Victoria, because this is a medical product, it's not taxable. However, in states that have legalized cannabis for recreational use, marijuana is taxable. And in fact, it's been a significant source of revenue for states like Colorado. The group called Regulate Florida is trying to get a proposed constitutional amendment on the Florida ballot that would allow for recreational consumption of this drug in 2018. This will be another interesting battle in the state over how marijuana is used, sold, potentially taxed. In terms of people seeing this product as a taxable revenue goldmine, how would that, let's say this were to become legal in the state, how would that change Trulieve's business model?
Well, it just depends on the way the laws are written. So if it becomes recreational, we'll have to obviously play by rules that are written into that. So we can't really guess how it would change because none of the actual rules for a recreational market have even been kind of discussed. So, you know, it'll just kind of be the crystal ball that we wish we had. But right now we're really focused on the creating really high quality medical products.
And does Trulieve operate only in Florida or do you have business in other states?
We're only in Florida. We have a rich history in Florida. Our farming, the Hackney family, and our grow out in Quincy, we are all Florida-based, and we're located only right here in Florida.
All right, let's go to some more calls for Trulieve Medical Marijuana and their cannabis dispensary opening today in Jacksonville. What are your questions? 549-2937. Aaron is in Jacksonville. Hi, Aaron. Good morning.
Good morning.
Yeah, go ahead.
Thank you for being here and answering questions. Cannabis is definitely an important thing. And I was wondering, you know, as a new patient myself, what sets Trulieve apart from the other companies? Like, why should I order my medicine from you guys?
Yeah, that's a great question. So we're the first licensed dispensary in Florida, which allowed us to create the largest product line currently in Florida. So depending on you and your physician's conversation and your preference as a patient, you can have something that custom tailors your not only your condition, but your preference and your lifestyle, whether it's capsules, oils, vaping. You know, we're trying to create and have the widest selection of strains so that you're able to customize, again, your treatment for your condition. We are the most affordable company right now in Florida, too. And our goal is to have the best patient access. So being in Jacksonville, obviously, is a huge advantage because patients want to be able to walk into the store and talk and see and touch and feel products. And so our goal is to continue to open stores so that patients have that access and ability.
Yeah, thanks for that call, Erin. And let's talk about the product in terms of affordability. Are these product lines covered by patients' insurance? How are they going to, particularly if you're a low-income person, how are they going to afford your product? And is it covered?
Right. It is not covered by insurance. So the products themselves are not covered, nor are the doctor's appointments to become a patient, a medical cannabis patient in Florida. So unfortunately, right now, it's not covered by insurance. We offer new patient discounts as well as a loyalty Trulievers program for patients to continually earn, you know, an additional 10% off. We offer 10% off every single purchase for veterans and SNAP card holders. So we're continually looking at ways to create new products at very, very economical prices.
Okay. And here's a little background for listeners. In November, Florida voters by 71% passed Amendment 2. That's the measure making medical marijuana legal for people with a host of conditions like cancer, epilepsy, HIV, PTSD, and other ailments. Last month, Governor Scott signed a bill that eliminates a 90-day waiting period for pot patients. He also, as Victoria pointed out, removed the sales tax from any cannabis transaction. There are about 800 or so doctors permitted by the State Department of Health to recommend cannabis. And Victoria, people have to go to the Office of Medical Marijuana and get an ID card. That is $75. So there is a cost there too, correct?
Yes, correct. That's $75 and that's renewed every year.
Okay. Let's go to some more calls on this. 549-2937. Ken is in Jacksonville Beach. Hey, Ken, good morning.
Hi, I was wondering the cost and the ability to get to a doctor to get the medical marijuana. Do you go to any doctor or do you go to a certain type of licensed doctor for the medical marijuana?
Yeah, so medical cannabis physicians have to take a specific course put on by the Florida Medical Association and enter into a special database. So in Jacksonville, there are a few dozen physicians that have the ability to do this. They're on our website at trueleaf.com. They're also on the Office of Medical Marijuana Use website. So the first step would be to make phone calls to those physicians, find out their pricing because it's all different, and set an appointment.
Now, it's my understanding that about 20,000 Floridians have registered for the state's medical marijuana program. You expect that number to jump to up to close to 1 million in the coming years. How do you see the regulatory process unfolding as people, as I asked you about earlier, you know, they might want to sample this product in a way that's more recreational than medical? How is Trueleaf preparing for that long-term potential abuse of the system?
Well, the system is set up extremely structured to prevent abuse. I mean, we have a triple check process. All of the orders are put into a state database, and we dispense every single order into that state database. So it's extremely tracked and monitored. The dispensation is done immediately on purchase, so patients can't, you know, stop by six different stores in an hour and, you know, double dip, if that's a good example. Physicians, also doctors, can only see, a patient can be only be assigned to one doctor at a time. So the system is set up relatively well to prevent that. There's a lot of checks and balances. So we haven't seen it in a year being an issue, and I don't really foresee that being an issue.
And what makes this so fascinating, too, is that marijuana is still federally illegal, even though states are legalizing at a rapid pace. Can you explain why that renders it is an all-cash business for that reason, correct?
Correct.
So that means when you go in to buy, do you have to have cash in hand?
We have ATMs on site if you don't have cash in hand or you're not sure, you know, how much your purchase is going to be. You don't have to fulfill your entire recommendation as a physician writes it. You can try one or two products at a time and kind of learn about the different products that we offer. But we have ATMs on site, and we also partner with CanPay, which is a cannabis-friendly app.
Okay. Frank is in Orange Park. Hi, Frank. Good morning.
Good morning.
Yeah, go ahead.
My question was, does Trueleaf process their products? And or is it pharmaceutical company help out, or and where are the processing plants? Are they in Florida also?
Absolutely. So the law is written in that we have to grow and process all of our products. We lab test them ourselves as well as we have to have a third party lab. So all of that happens in Quincy, Florida, about 20-30 minutes outside Tallahassee. That's our region. So all of our products are grown right here in Florida. All of our employees are our employees. We don't outsource any manufacturing per law. So everything is done in-house, and then it is sent around to all of the stores.
549-2937. Susan in Jacksonville Beach. Good morning, Susan.
Hi, how are you today?
All right, thank you. Go ahead.
Yes, I'm disabled, have been for a long time. Do want to change from my current medications, and my doctor is quite aware of this. I've already started changing to medical marijuana, but I am on Medicare, which does not cover the cost for a monthly prescription. And I'm wondering, what is the anticipated cost range, ballpark, something like that?
Okay, thanks for that.
It's a good question.
Yeah, go ahead.
Yes, right now what we're seeing in, you know, about the 10 to 15,000 patient visits that we have had in the past year, our customers spend on average between $150 to $200 for their order, and that ranges anywhere from 30 to 45 days worth of medication.
Here's an email for you from a listener. Does the Trueleaf dispensary own the building it's in? If a bank holds a mortgage on a property backed by FDIC, a clinic can be shut down because federal law supersedes state law. I know some property owners in another medical marijuana legal state who have met with great opposition and closure from the banks. How about that?
Yeah, so it's a little split. We do a lot of leasing our properties. We also own some of the properties. I don't have all the details of all of that, but it's a good question.
Okay, and here are a few tweets. Here's one from Doug. We've had medical heroin for decades without any push to legalize. The only slippery slope is more people realizing cannabis is safe, certainly safer than alcohol and tobacco at any rate. Another tweet, Florida law is very restrictive with these dispensaries. Is Trulieve a subsidiary of an out-of-state company? Do you have a parent company, Victoria?
We do not. Nope, we are not from another company out of state. We, all of our partners, all of our employees are all Florida bound.
And here's a comment on our First Coast Connect Facebook page. I wonder if Trulieve will take care credit.
That's a great question. I actually got asked that question the other day. I'm not sure if we can, so I will look into that.
Okay. With all of that said, you're holding a press conference in about half an hour at your location at 6259 Beach Boulevard, and then tours for the public?
So, yes, we'll do a quick dispensary tour, but we also, in our lobby, have tons of information as well as demonstration products where people can come in, ask questions, pick up some information on local doctors as well as our products.
All right. Well, thanks for giving us a few minutes this morning. We appreciate your time.
Thank you so much.
Victoria Walker is with the cannabis dispensary Trulieve, opening today in Jacksonville. Much more still ahead later. Find out how the new IKEA store in Jacksonville is going to be very environmentally friendly. But up next, why July is Medical Malpractice Month. Back in a moment.
From electronica to blues, listen to After Hours Monday through Friday at 9 p.m. only on 89.9 FM. Your community, your world, your music.
Who is your American Graduate Champion? WJCT is looking to recognize and honor a wide range of community leaders and everyday heroes who regularly dedicate their time, talent, and resources to prepare students for success and graduation. American Graduate Champions are role models in their communities whose stories have the potential to inspire others to take action. The nomination deadline is July 17th. Click the button on WJCT.org to nominate your American Graduate Champion today.
Want to learn more about fitness and heart health? Join WJCT and Baptist Health for Girls Day Out, Saturday, August 26th at the Hyatt Regency Hotel. Spend the day with experts that will engage you to be a better you. Enjoy breakfast, lunch, session, gift bag, and so much more. Tickets are just $40. Log on to WJCT.org/Girls Day Out and get your tickets today.
Welcome back. Well, July marks Medical Malpractice Awareness Month. It turns out medical errors are the third leading cause of death in this country. The Journal of Patient Safety estimates up to 400,000 people die each year from medical mistakes. That's the equivalent of up to two commercial jumbo jets full of passengers dying from medical mistakes every day. Medical malpractice attorneys Matt Soule and Fadi Shakur, MD, are with the Terrell Hogan Firm, and they join us this morning. Hey, guys.
Good morning.
Okay, Matt, you were here about a year ago talking about this topic. Has anything changed with bringing those numbers down? That's a lot of people dying each year from medical mistakes.
That's an awful lot of people. No, I don't believe there have been any significant change. But another way to look at it is the average number of people that die daily in the United States from medical errors is much greater than the average number of daily military deaths experienced during any of the wars
Wow.
the United States has been in. So it is a huge problem that doesn't get the attention. And attention I'm talking about is solving the problem, reducing medical errors. You know, whenever your enemies are more effective, or whenever the medical system is more effective in errors and killing people than your enemies who are trying to kill people, there needs to be a serious look at solving the problem. But right now, the national debate is focused primarily on funding, and that's a serious problem. But I do wish that instead of just looking at how to fund the healthcare, we're looking at also how to eliminate medical errors.
And why are they still a big problem? And when you say funding what? Dr. Shakur?
Well, they are still a big problem. Medical errors are still a big problem because obviously they're still the third leading cause of death in the United States. That is a big problem. What complicates this problem more is the lack of transparency in reporting and communicating these errors, not only amongst the medical staff themselves, but to patients so they know these errors are occurring. Let me give you an example. In 2004, as you may know, the voters in Florida passed an amendment to the Florida Constitution that required healthcare providers to share information regarding medical errors with patients. The hospitals have been fighting this law tooth and nail, and unfortunately, for instance, Baptist Medical Center has taken this fight all the way to the U.S. Supreme Court to prevent this law from taking effect. They don't want people to know about these medical errors.
Well, what are some of the most common errors? And from the point of, and full disclosure, we sit here in the midst of all this on this program. Baptist Health is a sponsor here at WJCT, and so is Terrell Hogan. What are the most common types of errors that you see?
Well, we see a lot of communication errors amongst the healthcare providers themselves, and things are slipping through the cracks. For instance, we have a client where he had a CT scan, and the CT scan showed a tumor in his lung, but 7 months passed before anybody told him about it. And by that time, it was too late. So this is one of the things we see a lot. This happens a lot during shift changes, and you know, people should be aware of that. Shift change could be a problem in a lot of hospitals.
And you also talk about the fact that transparency would make a difference. Also, the Florida Supreme Court ruled that caps on non-economic damages in medical malpractice cases are unconstitutional. What about that?
Well, you know, one thing I want to address first before I address that is the vast majority of medical care is really, really good. We're talking about a very small percentage of errors that cause significant problems whenever you're talking population our size. You know, the big thing about the caps on damages, one is that our Constitution, our founding fathers set it up so that everybody has a right to a jury trial. There's pros and cons with that. I get that. But when you start eroding one constitutional right, then you start opening up to a lot of the other constitutional rights being eroded. And I don't think we want to go down there. I think the better solution would be to try to figure out how to eliminate medical errors than reducing the caps. Reducing the amount they recover. Another thing to keep in mind is that when you're talking about reducing the non-economic damages, many times those are the most important damages. So if you're talking about elderly people that don't have lost earnings, if you're talking about a mother who doesn't work outside the home, well, the value that mother has to raising children is far more important, in my opinion, than the economic damages that might come from that. So it's a really unfair system. Let's focus on eliminating the medical errors. And I think a lot of the other problems will decline that we were looking to solve by capping damages.
Okay. And as attorneys, what would you say to those listening who would argue the opposite, that what we really need in the medical field is tort reform?
Well, tort reform, reforming what? I mean, before we start reforming the laws by which attorneys work or the legal community operates, we should work on preventing the medical mistakes. Changing the law is not going to change the number of medical mistakes. That's the bottom line. The medical mistakes will change if the healthcare providers themselves recognize the problems, try to resolve these issues, and communicate these problems with transparency.
What would you say to the idea that human beings are fallible? Even the most talented physicians, nurses make mistakes, that you have to account for that, for just human nature.
And the legal community takes that into consideration, and we recognize that there are some mistakes that are not do not constitute a cause of action for a lawsuit, and these are natural. Doctors are humans. I'm a medical doctor myself. My wife is too, mm-hmm. and I have a lot of friends who are doctors. We're humans. We make make mistakes, but when the mistakes are made because of lack of training or lack of communication, and could have been prevented easily. That's when the legal community gets involved.
Okay, and you know, it's really fascinating to talk about this because you know, as you pointed out, it's not something that gets as much attention in terms of the numbers. And people think of the leading causes of death in this country, and you know, medical mistakes. That doesn't really come to anyone's mind,
right?
Let's go to a call for you guys. It's Justin in Orange Park. Hi, Justin. Good morning.
Hi. My question is from a risk mitigation standpoint or loss mitigation standpoint. What kind of policies and procedures have been put in place in medical facilities to reduce the risk of medical malpractice? Because it's never going to be eliminated. We're human beings. We're always going to make mistakes. So what kind of policies are put in place in medical facilities to reduce the occurrences of medical malpractice? I'll take my question off the air.
Yeah. Thank you, Justin.
Thanks. Let me tell you about one policy that made a big difference. There was a Veterans Administration hospital in Kentucky, and they were trying to figure out what's the best way to handle telling patients about medical errors. So they split up their groups. Half of the groups, they said, we're going to make full disclosure. The others, they handled it normally. And what they found out is when they tell people about the medical error, they get them fully involved in figuring out what happened. They have full disclosure. The number of lawsuits brought against them dropped dramatically. And when there were lawsuits, the claims were settled for much less money. Probably half or more of the time people approach us, they're just trying to find out what happened. That's really important in the grieving process. Trying to prevent it from happening again. That's a big part of them. So that is a policy and procedure that could be put in place everywhere. In terms of the medical policies and procedure, Fadi, I'm sure, can address that better than I.
The majority of hospitals have or do what's called a root cause analysis, which is a meeting of the medical staff to discuss a mistake that has occurred and get to the bottom of the mistake, the root of the mistake, how was it caused, and try to prevent it from happening in the future. What the problem that we've seen is that every time we as attorneys investigate a medical mistake, we ask for root cause analysis related documents or if a root cause analysis was ever done. The problem is the answer is almost always no, it was not done, despite the fact that there is an obvious mistake.
Well, it's a fascinating topic, and July is Medical Malpractice Awareness Month. Thanks for shedding some light.
Thank you for having us.
Matt Soule and Fadi Shakur, MD, with the Terrell Hogan Firm. And in a moment, Going Green goes inside the new IKEA store. That's next.
Or at home, chill out with the Electro Lounge, only on 89.9, Tuesday to Saturday nights.
Next time on 1A, broadband access for more than 23 million rural Americans is lousy. Microsoft says it wants to change that.
We went overseas, and that's a good thing. We should be around the world. but we should also be focused on our own backyards.
What do tech companies gain by connecting rural America? Next time on 1A. Weekdays at 10 after First Coast Connect on 89.9 WJCT. Your community, your world.
Welcome back. Well, lots of excitement about the new IKEA store that's going up near the St. John's Town Center. The Swedish home furnishings giant is known for its stylish yet affordable products. But what you might not have known is that IKEA is also committed to sustainability. Now, the Jacksonville store will not only feature IKEA's trademark blue and yellow color scheme, it'll also have solar panels atop its roof. Joseph Roth is with IKEA, and he's on the line with more in today's Going Green. Hey, Joseph, good morning.
Good morning.
Lots of excitement about IKEA opening this fall in Jacksonville. People are applying for jobs there. But what we've recently learned is that you're going to have solar panels on top of the store. Tell me a little bit about this, and is this something that IKEA does on all its stores?
Yes. Reflecting our Swedish heritage, IKEA has a very strong commitment to the environment and minimizing our impact on the environment. And we actually have more than 90% of our U.S. buildings have solar panels on the roof. We're excited that that plan now includes the Jacksonville location opening this fall.
Awesome. And as your announcement states, this is the equivalent of reducing more than 2,000 tons of carbon dioxide or the emissions of more than 400 cars. So it's a commitment to sustainability, but IKEA is known for that around the world. What do you do in your buildings besides the solar panels? There are a lot of things going on with your company in this space, correct?
Correct. In addition to the solar panels, which, by the way, we actually, just as we buy our land and build our building, we actually purchase our solar energy systems. Lots of other folks may lease it or just have power purchase agreements. We actually buy our systems. We also have skylights in the warehouse. We have, of course, efficient energy use of our lighting and our energy systems inside the store. All of our interior and exterior lighting is LED. And even in our restrooms, we have water-conserving utilities.
You, in fact, IKEA has the goal of being completely energy independent in 3 years, by 2020. Not only are you going heavily into solar, you also own hundreds of wind turbines. How do you use wind power?
Well, it's actually a very unique situation because with solar panels, the energy from the solar goes straight to the stores. But with wind farms, those are actually off-site. You know, we own a wind farm in South Texas and one in Central Illinois. So those actually, the power from those wind farms are sold straight back to the grid. So it really just offsets. And our goal is to be basically generating as much energy through renewable energy by 2020 as we're actually consuming worldwide. And in the U.S., we are already ahead of that goal. We're actually exceeding our goal already. So that's very exciting, and we're helping contribute to the IKEA goal globally.
Wow. And not only that, it's my understanding you will not have plastic bags at checkout when the new store opens. Is that right?
Correct. Actually, it was nearly 10 years ago, IKEA was the first mass retailer in the U.S. to phase out the use of plastic bags at checkout. In fact, we also were the first mass retailer to phase out the sale of traditional incandescent light bulbs. And as of a couple years ago, we began selling only LED. So now we practice what we preach. We only sell it, and then we only use it. But our goal is not just for us to be sustainable, but to help empower our customers to be sustainable as well.
So when people shop at the new IKEA store this fall and they're buying a few small items, should they just plan on bringing their own bags, or are you going to paper bags? How will people check out?
Well, we do not have paper bags. What we do sell available to customers are durable blue bags, which can be reused for laundry or beach or shopping in IKEA or other stores. Or you could simply just take the items straight to your car.
Fascinating stuff. And lots of excitement about the store. Just a few short months till it opens. Joseph Roth is with IKEA. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you. My pleasure. We're excited to open this fall.
And we'll be right back.
This Going Green segment is made possible by A1A Solar.
WJCT and the Florida Theater present Wildcrest live on stage at the Florida Theater March 4th at 1 p.m. and 4:30 p.m. Watch the Kret brothers bring their creature adventure fun from the popular PBS Kids series to life on stage. Tickets available at floridatheater.com.
Austin, Texas is booming, and as its neighborhoods change, many Black residents are being pushed out.
I was a part of the community. It doesn't really exist anymore as it did. And that's pretty sad for me.
I'm Ari Shapiro. Why Austin's Black residents are leaving and where they're going, plus the latest on Trump and Russia, this afternoon on All Things Considered from NPR News.
Today at 4 on 89.9 WJCT, your community, your world.
On the next Fresh Air, actor and comic Kumail Nanjiani and comedy writer Emily V. Gordon, they co-wrote and he stars in the new romantic comedy The Big Sick. It's based on how they met and later got married after she was placed in a medically induced coma. Nanjiani grew up in Pakistan, and in the film, his parents want him to have a traditional arranged marriage. Join us weekdays at noon on 89.9 WJCT, your community, your world.
Greece is still getting more refugees than it can take care of, so people are taking matters into their own hands.
For us, it was important to meet these people, to speak with these people, to know them better, to hear their stories, to share our stories with them, like neighbors.
I'm Kai Rizdal. The still happening European refugee crisis, next time on Marketplace.
Weekday evenings at 6 on 89.9 WJCT, your community, your world.
Welcome back. Well, finally this hour, after an incredible career with the Jacksonville Public Library, longtime director Barbara Gubbin is stepping down. Now, Barbara first began her love affair with books and libraries when she was working as a volunteer teacher at an all-girls Catholic school in Ghana. That set Gubbin on a course that would take her from library school in London to a job in Texas and then here in Jacksonville. And after more than a decade in the position, Barbara Gubbin is stepping away but taking with her a love of books and learning. Barbara Gubbin, good morning.
Good morning, Melissa. It's great to be here.
Great to have you, and happy retirement.
Thank you very much. big change.
Yes, it is, and a big change for the library system. Mm-hmm. You had a really nice big send-off, and it's a pleasure to have you on the show. You came to lead the Jacksonville Public Library in 2005. That was right when voters approved the Better Jacksonville Plan, and we got the opening of this beautiful, huge, new downtown library. But then you saw the library system through some really lean financial times, too.
Yes, that's true. So let's start with the wonderful November 2005 date, November 12th, when we opened the new main library. Really exciting. I mean, we had thousands of people join us, and it was a huge celebration. And for the following few years, we had amazing growth at our library system. And people really, after voting to tax themselves to build the new libraries, they really came and used us. And then, of course, the recession came, and it hit us very hard. It hit the whole city. And I would have to say they were pretty tough years. Mm-hmm. But the people of Jacksonville stayed with us and still use the library really heavily. And we're kind of building back up. So it was a good time to decide to retire and allow new leadership. But I'll be following the library closely, you can be assured.
And under your leadership, so many people access the library, not just to read a book, but to check out movies, music, look at their email, look for a job, learn a foreign language, learn how to start a business, learn a musical instrument. You can do a lot of things at the library in addition to reading a book.
You're right. And if I could just say, I was talking to some of your previous guests before I was able to join you here, and talking about the fact that you can book a librarian at the library if you're interested, for example, in genealogy and want to research your family. Well, spend an hour with a specialist for free. Mm-hmm. At the Jacksonville Public Library. It's just one of many examples of the services that we now offer.
Now, you were in the profession for over 40 years, and you were recently honored by the American Library Association. So kudos on that, too.
Yes, it was a very special award, Ernest DeMattia Award for Innovation and Service to Community from the American Library Association. Ernie DiMattia is a very well-known public library director, passed away, and so it was wonderful. I knew him, so a particularly special award to win this and get that recognition nationally.
Why are libraries so important to this country?
I would say there are at least three reasons. One is, of course, related very closely to education, particularly for the youngest amongst us. But all of us need to read, to learn, to stay connected to learning our entire lives. But libraries are also a wonderful place for people to come together, to collaborate, to meet people, and to have community, which I think we sorely lack sometimes, and the library can provide that. And then, of course, libraries are perhaps one of the most important places for supporting democracy in our community. You can vote at the library, you can learn at the library, and so a really important democratic institution, which is, as it says above, the entrance to the main library, open to all.
Now, a few years ago, there was an effort to set up an independent taxing district for our libraries. That didn't make it. Do you think that'll be tried again as a way to preserve library funding in future years?
I can't speak to whether it will be tried again. I will say that I think it ought to be. As we looked at the recession, libraries that are independent districts were able to better direct their resources and support themselves and to recover with the economy coming back. So I'd certainly like to see this community reconsider that and go after it. So I think it's a very positive thing to look for in the future.
Now, you're keeping your options open, looking at a lot of things, even maybe joining the Peace Corps. Is that right?
Well, that's certainly one thing I've talked about. There's something called Peace Corps Response, which is like a 6 or 9 month assignment somewhere in the world to provide the expertise that I've learned over the years. I think that would be exciting. Maybe some consulting work. I'm keeping my options open because everyone said to me, after you retire, don't jump into something right away. So I'm kind of doing catch up. I'm thinking I'm going to take a vacation, so I'm sort of planning
for that.
I'm doing some traveling. But I'm certainly going to be looking for something to get my teeth into again. I can't see myself not being hugely involved in something like libraries and service to people. So looking for those options once I've kind of got myself settled as a retired person.
Sure. Well, it's a well-earned vacation and retirement, and what a contribution you've made to this community.
Thank you.
And thank you as well for the library's partnership with WJCT on our First Coast Connect Book Club, I want to say. That's been a really fruitful partnership, too.
Yes, indeed. You can always find the book and check it out from your Jacksonville Public Library.
She's Barbara Gubbin, and thanks for joining us. And
Thank you. Have a great trip
to, is it Poland?
It's Poland
Wow.
I'm going to, yes.
Well, I hope that is really fascinating.
It will be. Thanks,
right.
Melissa.
Barbara Gubbin retiring from the Jacksonville Public Library after some 40 years in the library business. I guess you can call it a business. That's our show today. Thanks so much for listening. And thanks to all of our guests and callers. Our producer is Kevin Merschart. Michelle Corum runs the board. The show theme is composed and performed by the Jacksonville Symphony Orchestra's Pyotr Chevchik. And never miss a show. If you download the WJCT app, you can listen to any podcast there anytime or catch us on iTunes. Coming up next on 1A, why the Internet Fast Lane has bypassed rural America. That's coming up at 10 o'clock. I'm Melissa Ross, and you've been listening to First Coast Connect on 89.9 WJCT FM Jacksonville. Your community, your world. We'll be right back here again at 9 a.m. tomorrow. Thanks, as always, for listening, and have a great day.